September 2nd, 2020, and time keeps passing. It's the full moon. And Wan Prat, the lunar observance day, so also known as the Uposatha. And it was nice to see earlier today some people in the hall practicing in the afternoon. That's normally what would happen in Thailand on the Uposatha day. The meals a bit earlier, so there'd be no breakfast, but then the main meal at 8:30 or 9 a.m., and everything's cleaned up by about 10 a.m., and people would start practicing maybe noon or 1 p.m., and practicing through the day. It'd be tea time, and then evening puja, and then continuing with the Dhamma talk and sitting and walking meditation through the evening. So it's nice to have these times when we can hit reset, start over, and whatever's been happening through the week, then we can begin again. So everything we're doing in the monastery, like sometimes we slip or we get into a rut, and so then there's these nice times where we can begin again, and that's important. And it's good to be open, open-minded, open to new ideas, new ways of doing things, new ways of practicing, new ways of holding things, new perceptions. Sometimes we might see certain situations or people in the monastery, and we develop perceptions, and those can turn into biases and judgments. And so being open to questioning things, questioning everything, questioning our beliefs, our perceptions about ourselves and others, and that's super important. That's actually a vital part of practice. One of the good things about impermanence is we don't stay static, others don't stay static, things can change, things can get better. Or things can get worse. So the problem a lot of the time is ignorance. Actually, that's always the problem. Delusion, ignorance, avijja, so that's a lack of clear seeing, clear knowing. Avijja. Avijja is what causes samsara, causes the wandering on in the round of existence, according to the Buddha's teachings. And so, what is this? What is this avijja? What is this ignorance? So, if we talk about human beings, so regardless of who we are, where we come from, what our beliefs might be, as we're brought up, whatever our conditioning might be, then everybody wants to be happy, so everybody's doing things to try to be happy, so we want happiness, we want the causes of happiness, and then because there's this avijja, there's this lack of true knowledge, a lack of clear seeing, then although we may want happiness, then we keep doing things that are actually the causes of suffering. And then we keep suffering, and we want to be happy, and then we keep doing things that are the causes of more suffering. So what are those causes of suffering? That's attachment, experiencing something pleasant, and tanha, that's the craving or the attachment to things, trying to hold on to things. So when we try to hold on to things, we suffer when we lose them. Or then there's aversion, coming into contact with that which we don't like and trying to get rid of it, trying to destroy it, push it away. And that's a cause of suffering. And then there's delusion. So this goes part and parcel with identification. So we might hold a belief about ourselves or others as an example. Or we might have some sort of belief system and we cling to that. We cling to our perceptions and beliefs, and then even if there might be evidence that our beliefs are actually otherwise, we're presented with some sort of evidence that the reality is actually otherwise, we can't let go of it because there's a sense of identification. So we've invested in our belief systems for a long time. We've invested in our belief systems for a long time, and so we become identified with them. When we're identified with them, then we can't let go. So that's a function of delusion. So there's a sutta about this, and it highlights how we identify with the five khandhas, with the body, feeling, perception, thoughts, consciousness, and these things are quite helpful to us. So we're born into the world, and we can experience pleasure and pain, and we like when we experience pleasure, we don't like when we experience pain, but we hold on to those experiences of pleasure and think, you know, wow, well, with these five khandhas, I can experience all these amazing things. And if we might have a little bit of Dhamma, a little bit of wisdom, might be able to lead a fairly good life. Even if we don't practice, we might have a natural sense of sila, of virtue. And even if we don't know about Dhamma, we might even know people like this who may not be practitioners or may not know the Dhamma, but they have a pretty high level of happiness and they lead good lives. They might have a good career, good family. So there's a little bit of Dhamma there. There's that sense of integrity and letting go that might already be there from whatever causes. So there's that sense of somebody might not be a practitioner, but then there's that sense of integrity. There's integrity and there's a bit of Dhamma. There's that idea that letting go, there's patience, and that might be there to a certain extent. So there's this sense that the five khandhas can be quite helpful to us. And this sutta is attributed to Sariputta, where he's talking about it's as if you have a trusty servant, and you have a servant that's worked for you for quite a long time, and you've become friends with them. They've been very trustworthy, and they do everything for you, all the important work for you. So they clean the house, they do all sorts of chores for you, and they bring you the mail or whatever you do in your life. They say it's like having a trusty servant that does things for you. So the five khandhas are like this. You have a body that can go places, and feelings and thoughts, and we can come up with ideas, and we can build things and do work and solve problems. So the five khandhas are like a trusty servant. And then eventually, time goes on, the servant keeps working for us. And then we have the full trust of that servant. And then after a long period of time, one day, when we're not expecting it, then they come and stab us in the back and betray us. And so Sariputta goes on to say that the five khandhas are very much like this. So eventually we grow old, get sick. The thoughts that helped us to solve problems and have good ideas and do work, the thought faculty declines. The cognitive faculties decline. The body declines. The sight declines. The hearing declines. So all of the sense faculties go into decline, and we might fall ill, we might get sick, like some of us with the smoke from the forest fires right now, feeling like there might be mucus in the throat, or old age, so there's that sense of decline, and then eventually death. So the trusty five khandhas, they end up betraying us in the end. We can't ultimately rely on them. They break up, they die, they pass away. So how do we hold that? So knowing from the beginning, then when the Buddha comes and tells us all about this, then knowing that, then there's a way we can know, okay, well, this, we're given the intel. We're given the intel that this servant is actually going to do harm to us in the end. So then knowing that, we have a sense of sobriety, or a sense of stepping back. So there's a sense of stepping back and knowing, okay, yes, they still work for me right now. They still work for me right now, but I know that eventually this is going to happen. So not getting too invested in the five khandhas, not getting too intoxicated with them, and not getting too much relying on them completely for our sense of well-being and happiness. So that's when we start to gain insight into the five khandhas. So there's this sense of identification with the five khandhas, and the identification may be very strong. This is who we are. These are my habits. These are my wholesome habits. These are my unwholesome habits. This is my history. These are my mannerisms. This was my experience of pleasure and pain in this life. This is the betrayals and tragedies and so on in this life. And then investing a sense of identification, a sense of self. This is who I am. And because that identification has happened already for a very long time, then it's hard to let go of. It's difficult to drop that. And even though it's heavy and it's a burden, and it's going to crush us in the end. It's difficult to drop it just because it's like during the online Upasaka day, there was a Lumpur Cha reading, and he's talking about the carrying a heavy log. And so the five khandhas is like, it's like carrying a heavy log, and it's heavy, and yet we have this feeling like if we drop it, then we won't have anything. So it's heavy, but at least we have something. At least we have something. So somebody comes up to that, somebody sees a man holding a log and says, you know, if you drop that log, you'll experience lightness. And then the other guy says, well, but then I won't have anything. But then the first man says, well, you want happiness, don't you? You want lightness. And then the person holding the heavy log says, well, yes, I want happiness, I want lightness, I want peace. He says, well, okay, just drop that log and you'll have it. And then the other person says, well, but if I drop it, I won't have anything. So it's not easy for them to have a conversation. They're talking past each other, and that's how it is. That's how it is with identification, with clinging. So it's like the Buddha saying, drop the five khandhas, drop the identification with the five khandhas. It doesn't mean like do harm to ourselves or anything, or speed up the process of aging and death somehow. We don't want to do that. We allow nature to take its course, but at the same time, how do we drop that sense of identification with the five khandhas and therefore, for the first time, truly experience lightness, true peace, true happiness? So how do we work toward that? How do we do that? And we do have to do something. Just sitting here isn't going to cause us to drop the five khandhas. We do have to look. We do have to cultivate mindfulness. There is a process. There is an effort. There is a sense of striving and clarifying of awareness. And there's suttas about the sense of identification with the five khandhas where the Buddha just illustrates it very simply and clearly. The Buddha's just sitting in a forest with some bhikkhus, and he says, bhikkhus, do you see those grass twigs and leaves? They say yes, and he says, are those twigs yours, or are those leaves yours, or is that grass yours? Is that bark yours, or is that dirt on the ground yours? And they say, well, no, it's just sitting there. It's not ours. We don't have anything to do with it. It's just there. And it says, well, it's not yours, so would you want to pick it up? They say, no, that's just twigs and leaves sitting on the ground. Why would we do that? And then he says, well, form isn't yours, you know, don't pick it up. You know, feeling isn't yours, don't pick it up. Perception isn't yours, don't pick it up. Mental formations, sankharas, thoughts, they aren't yours, don't pick them up. Consciousness isn't yours, you know, don't pick it up. So just that's actually incredible, you know, to try to see it that way. And that's all we're trying to do in the practice. So just years of practice, decades of practice, we're trying to not pick it up. How do we not pick it up? And yet, it involves a process with the five khandhas, so we have to think, we have to contemplate, we have to consider how to do these things, but it's like a retraining. We have to retrain the perception. And use mindfulness to start to see how are we picking things up? What's the actual process of us picking things up? And the Buddha goes on to say you have to see the suffering. That's the first noble truth. So you have to actually see the suffering of picking things up, see the heaviness, experience the heaviness, know that it's there. Yeah, know that we're holding a log that's heavy and it's crushing us. And it comes up on a daily basis, on a minute-to-minute basis, these truths. They're always kind of in our face, but it's just looking from the right angle. Just little things like having to eat, having to clean the monastery, having to sleep, just having to bathe and having to look after ourselves, having to look after the khandhas. Actually, maybe it's not even like they're our servant. It's like we're their servant, actually, having to look after them and having to go to the doctor, having pain, having headaches, having stomach aches. Working and getting tired, feeling tired. There's smoke in the air and having to breathe in air that's not clean. Or just a whole list of things that can afflict us. This is all heaviness. The anxiety we might feel, like, am I going to get sick? Is something going to happen? That's a burden. Food, having to eat the right food that agrees with us, that we're wanting to be comfortable, not wanting to be too hot or too cold. It's a very, very narrow comfort zone. Not wanting someone to criticize us, wanting people to praise us, wanting people to be nice to us, not wanting people to be mean to us. There's a very narrow zone of things people can say to us, which we're going to be okay with, we're going to be comfortable with. There's only a few things we're going to want to hear that make us feel okay and not hurt or feel like things aren't okay. So all of these are very heavy. All of this is a burden. So sometimes it's helpful to have examples, you know, like Lungpa Liam is a really good example of someone who doesn't pick things up. And being at Wat Pa Pong is kind of like the more difficult the situation he was faced with, the more you could see he was just delighting and letting go. You know, you'd go to him and be like, you won't believe what happened, Lungpa. You won't believe what happened at this monastery. This horrible thing. Or such and such tried to kill somebody. And, you know, you'd see people get worked up, really worked up. He'd be like, you know, kind of wouldn't respond, or would say like, well, yeah, that's just normal human nature. But, yeah, just say like, the important thing is that you don't make it your suffering. You don't worry about it. And it's not a sense of dismissiveness, but it's like we can't really solve problems if we're in a state of anxiety or confusion or fear. You need to come back to just how do we come back to lightness? So it's part of it too is like seeing if things are heavy in the moment. Like in this moment, okay, say, throughout the day, today, did I experience any heaviness? Did I experience any sense of dis-ease, discomfort in any of my actions that I did on my own or my interactions with people? Did I experience any sense of anxiety, dis-ease? And that's heaviness. And then we can trace it back and say, well, if there was heaviness, if there was dis-ease, by inference, we can say there was clinging, there was craving. So let's look at that. There's nothing else to blame. So according to the Buddhist teachings, there's nothing else to blame. There's no one else to blame. It's craving, it's delusion. That's what is to blame. It's attraction, it's aversion, that is what's to blame. And yet even that, we don't like get hyper judgmental of ourselves or like really like pounding ourselves into submission somehow. Because even that is aversion is to blame. That's gonna compound the suffering. So coming back to Longbor Pasano used the word in his teaching at the Padimokkha today, balance. Coming back to balance. There's this phrase, balancing the faculties. Balancing the faculties and what's actually going to lead to lightness. So we can easily do this in terms of a reflection or a contemplation. We can actually think of some time today or yesterday or some time in the last week where we may have suffered or we may have felt a sense of dis-ease. Either we were tired or something happened or something didn't go our way or we didn't do something according to how we wanted to do it. It didn't work out. We had an expectation. It didn't happen that way. Anything. And then see, like, how did we deal with that situation in our mind and what was the kind of reverberation in the mind and how did the thinking process, how did the perception deal with that? You know, what did it pin it on? Or I say, oh, it was because of that or because of this. And then trying to do this kind of thought experiment where we turn it back and say, well, what was the expectation? What did I want out of that? What did I expect? What was I hoping for? And question that instead and come back to that and say, oh, okay, that's how to get into lightness, sense of starting to, in a way, I guess you could say, sober up out of the defilements. So balance, yeah, coming back to balance, that's such a good word. Or Longpor Chao would also use the analogy of heat, like the five khandhas are like, they're all hot, they're like a burning ball of iron, and anywhere you touch them you get burned. And of course, when we say touch, we mean that sense of identification. Anywhere we identify with them, consider them ours, that then we get burned. The problem is we've always been burned in this way, and so we don't really notice it, we don't really know it. So wisdom is not like, when we say wisdom, it's not like getting the answer right, like on a multiple choice quiz. wisdom is a natural thing that happens when we pop back into the reality that we're being burned all the time. So wisdom is like, we could illustrate what is wisdom, panya, that like if we put our hand in a fire and our hand automatically recoils from the fire. So we accidentally, say, put our hand in a fire, automatically it recoils, and we don't, it's not like we put our hand in a fire, it's okay, burning, like, let me check the suttas, let me check, like, the instruction manual about, like, what am I supposed to do in this event, and there's no hesitation. The hand recoils automatically because there's that natural wisdom in the hand, there's the nerves, and touch something hot, touch a fire, and the hand recoils automatically. So we apply that to the mind being burned. When we see it, then the mind will recoil, will move back from that sense of identification. So that's the promise of the practice of the Buddha's teachings. But then at the same time, because that's never really happened before, that it's incredibly difficult. We've been holding all this weight and we've never really set it down, so it's incredibly unusual, new. It's like starting to acquire a taste for the practice. So there's the coming back to Lungpo Cha again, just having these great examples, these great teachers, it's like saying like the truth of the Buddha's teachings and the goals of the Buddha's teachings, the goal does exist, yet it takes real looking into things, a real, even to the extent of putting one's life on the line, actually really trying to see things, really trying to drop things, really practicing, really doing the meditation, really doing the sitting meditation, the walking meditation, really questioning when there's suffering, when there's anxiety, when there's disease, really looking into it, really taking, seeing that it's the responsibility of the defilements, the attraction, the aversion, the delusion to create that suffering. So really looking into it with that angle, with that viewpoint, then seeing that, okay, this is the duty of craving is to create suffering. And for so long, we've just been circling around, coming back to the same place, coming back to craving to try to get rid of our suffering. And it's the very cause of it. So that's why we're just circling around. And it's hidden. It's hidden from us. It's like right in front of us, but it's hidden. It's like some sort of veil. It's just these natural truths are hidden from us. And when we talk like this too, it's not even like a judgment of ourselves or others, but it's just seeing that it is this way. There is disease, there is heaviness, and there is this sense of identification with the five khandhas, so learning how to question it, question everything. There's also a principle that comes up in the suttas called preservation of truth that we can apply to this practice. And so not like jumping to conclusions, like it is absolutely this or absolutely that that's causing my suffering, but then investigating. We have to be like a hunter or a tracker. In the suttas, the Buddha uses the analogy of an elephant. So a hunter tracking an elephant and seeing footprints and saying, oh, that looks like the footprints of a tusker elephant, but that tracker doesn't jump to the conclusion this is a tusker elephant. He thinks, well, there's some types of elephants. There's some female elephants that might have large feet in that way. The attributes of the footprint aren't quite clear. I need more information, so tracking the elephant footprints going on and seeing broken branches, thinking, okay, well, usually only the tusks would break the branches like that, and the footprints look big like a tusker elephant. The branches are broken like a tusker elephant does, but sometimes there's other reasons the branches break. Other elephants may have been eating from those branches or breaking them for some other reason, so he doesn't jump to the conclusion this is a tusker elephant, but keeps going on. And then eventually, only when he sees the tusker elephant itself does he know, okay, these were indeed the footprints of a tusker elephant. But so it's important not to jump to conclusions about our practice. There may be evidence, and we may be right or wrong about it, just by chance. There were times when Ananda would make these kind of inspired declarations to the Buddha. Wow, this is amazing. I just saw this for the first time. And the Buddha would say, like, Ananda, you are correct about that, but you were guessing. But he just happened to have gotten it right. So I think that's a good contemplation, just to hold is where is the heaviness? How are we creating that? Questioning our own cravings, our own hopes, our own expectations for ourselves and others. Seeing how do we hold things? How do we pick things up? What are we doing here that causes the sense of dissatisfaction to arise? Or, on the other side, like, when we do have ease, lightness, investigating that too, like, where did that come from? What did we drop to cause that? It doesn't just come out of nowhere. So what did we let go of? Like one time at Wat Pho Phong, there was a bhikkhu who was he was holding an electric cord, and it was like frayed, and Ajahn Chah was walking by, and this cord like shocked this monk, the Western monk, and he like dropped it. And Ajahn Chah, walking by, said, "Hey, why did you drop that? Who told you to? Who told you to drop that?" Well, nobody told him to. It was wisdom. It was natural wisdom that told him to drop it. So these are just a few little reflections that were in my mind. I'm going to be going on to a four-week retreat now, so just kind of thinking about these things a bit and wanting to have a sense of lightness on retreat, thinking for myself, how do I cultivate that? How do I get to that? And how do I be nourished by that? So wanting just to share a little bit of that with all of you. And I think I'll leave it there for this evening.